Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Bray, Chief Information Officer with the Federal Communications Commission. So, David, given the role information technology plays in mission delivery and program performance, how has the role of the Chief Information Officer evolved to become more than just a mission support person, but a trusted advisor?
At the FCC, I say, because oftentimes I may get asked policy questions and I have to step back and say, I just do IT. But then when I say I just do IT, then the question usually is, well, what nowadays does not involve IT? And I think that's the world we've come in that technology has become ubiquitous. And so the role of the Chief Information Officer can't be seen as just doing IT support and keeping the engines running. We often need to think about how best we actually use that technology to accomplish the mission of the organization, both in terms of the here and now, but also having a strategy and a vision for where we want to go. And so the joy that I've been having at the FCC, aside from dealing with the, in some respects, I actually like parachuting into situations where I'm the underdog and we have outdated systems, because clearly what we've been doing hasn't been working so far, and so we can challenge the status quo. But the other joy I've been having is actually been working with the chairman's office, with the managing director, to actually say, well, what's our 3 to 5 year plan, and actually sort of map that plan going forward. And to have a CIO involved in that conversation is fun, because technology will be embedded in everything we do nowadays going forward. And I think that also helps you, because sometimes policy or laws are crafted and then the implementation is thought through. And then they say, okay, technology people, now make this happen. And you're like, wait. How did we get to this path where we're now doing this approach when we could have done this approach, which would have been a whole lot easier? And so having that conversation. The other thing is, I think CIOs everywhere, both in the public sector and in the private sector, need to be more outwardly focused, because the lines are getting blurred as to what's inside your organization, what's not inside your organization, both in terms of technology, but also just in terms of getting things done. I think the interesting trend that will accelerate is, the example of the FCC speed test app being one, is it's not something that's done solely by government workers. It's not even something that's solely done by public-private partnerships. It's actually something that's being done directly by the public. And so that's why I like to use the word public service, because I think public service involves, and it increasingly involves, not just government, not just public-private partnerships, but also the public actually playing an active role and actually being not just a observer and a watcher, but they can actually be an active participant in the process. And so I think for a CIO, you need to be thinking about, how are you doing things outwardly? How are you engaging that network? How are you learning from that network? And how are you looking for opportunities to actually do things that you don't have to do just in your organization itself?
Well, maybe a little bit outside your particular role, but something that maybe dovetails with your expertise. What emerging technologies hold the promise for improving the work you do, and maybe beyond what you do, what the whole of federal government does?
The one technology I would point to that I hold a lot of hope for is algorithms. And let me step back a little bit and say what I mean by algorithms. In 2012, the Hewlett Foundation apparently had a competition to see if anyone could write an algorithm that would grade a third grade essay as well as a school teacher. And for $60,000, apparently someone actually won that competition by writing an algorithm that actually would find the same grammar problems that a third grade teacher would find. A year later, apparently Xerox actually produced a copier where you can actually take a handwritten test, put it on the copier, it will scan the tests, scan the questions and the answers, and actually grade it for the teacher. Now, in public service, we have opportunities where we do job classification, which is a fairly intensive human process. I'd love to be able to turn to the computer and say, based on the database you have of different job postings that are acceptable, can you compose to me the following job posting that will have the following skills for these individuals and classify it as appropriate? And then, show me the example and then advertise it. And 2 weeks later, select from the people that actually have applied, give me the top 5 candidates so I can then meet with them. And so can we actually have the machine help us do that, as opposed to what right now is a somewhat of a magic art sort of esoteric approach to, the people who do classifications do it very seriously, but it's something that I think would be interesting to actually have an algorithm do it. The other example I'd point to is requests for proposals. The same thing. I'd love to be able to say to the machine, I'm looking for an RFP that will have these following things be competed for. Can you compose the RFP for me? Make sure it checks all the bounds, the FAR as appropriate. Advertise it. And then give me the top 5 people that have actually applied, or give me, that we can go from there. The interesting thing with that, and the example that I like to hold up, is back when the U-2 spy planes RFP went out, it was only 2 pages. So sort of that same model, how can I get back to doing things with a 2-page RFP as opposed to a 200 or 300 page RFP?
So, David, as you, transition to the future a little bit, what are some of the major opportunities and potential challenges your organizations will face in the next coming few years, and how do you envision your office will evolve to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
I think the opportunity and challenge is, so millennials will not be wedded to a single job in a single place. You know, so the FCC model where people have been there for more than 15 and a half years on average, that we have people, I mean, I have people on my staff right now that have been there for 40, 42, even 50 years. I don't think you're going to see that with the same generation that we have with the millennials, and then Gen Z. When Gen Z comes after millennials, which apparently is a generation that has never known the world without the internet. Instead, they may move from job to job. I mean, even in my own career, I've probably changed within public service and also with the private sector. I've changed jobs generally about 3 or 4 years. They've all been around a common theme. So we've been loyal to a almost like profession, but not to a specific organization. I think that actually makes us more diverse in our ideas and actually allows for cross-pollination. But I think that's a challenge because you don't want to have that talent necessarily disappear with all the ideas and the momentum that you had. And so I think technology may be an interesting way to sort of take that on because, again, if the world is getting blurred, we can do things like challenge.gov for public service. We can do things like maybe a Kickstarter for interesting ideas. And so you can actually tap into expertise that's not always in your organization. We are doing something and we plan to launch a more formal event later. We may call it the FCC Ambassadors Program, where we are trying to get people on short 6 to 12 month engagements that are coming in from Silicon Valley, from other parts of the country, just to bring in those ideas and actually infuse those ideas going forward and recognizing that it's term limited. And so it can be focused on a specific outcome and then they can go elsewhere. I'm interested when we start to see, and I know that the General Services Administration started this experiment, when people in government aren't just doing 100% for one organization. Mm-hmm. I think there was recently, they were looking for someone that would do a 20% time and then 80% time somewhere else. And so when we start doing that, that's an interesting shift for public service because right now you have HR departments for each of the different organizations that you're with. Maybe we need it that you come in and you say, okay, congratulations, you're now with Federal Public Service. You can move around mobile-wise around that. And actually, if there's an interesting problem that you can actually, quote unquote, bill your hours to, even though you are a government employee, then that's great. If it gets to be 3 or 6 months and you're not able to sort of have those billable hours, then we're going to have a conversation of, is this really working out? You know, in some respects, it's shifting more towards a bring the right skills to the right problem, which then points to how technology is going to need us to actually identify who's those right people. That the machine says, I see you're trying to solve a problem like this. Let me give you the top 10 names of interesting people in the space, and you might want to actually see if you can bring them onto your team. And maybe the team's only going to work for 3 or 4 months on that problem and then dissolve. But I think that's the world we're going into because things are so emergent more and more that that we can't do formal organizational structures just because they would be too slow. And then you always have the trouble of organizations often don't know when they need to change or morph, where this way you could actually impose them going forward.
It's interesting when you describe that. It's almost like you have a consultancy apparatus or approach, and then you have the jointness from the DoD side.
Yes.
And so with that as a backdrop, and it's a very interesting way to look at the generations, what advice would you give someone who is thinking about a career in public service?
I would say we're looking for creative problem solvers, first and foremost. And so that means you need to have really sort of three skills. The ability to characterize what the problem is, because if you can't define what the problem is, then you can't even begin to sort of solve it. But then you need to be able to implement on it. So it's more than just sort of like the McKinsey and the Bains of the world, which are really good at characterizing problems and making recommendations and then moving on to the next one. You then actually have to deliver. And that's hard because that's the messy art of involving with humans. You know, I often joke, if you want a perfect system, get rid of all the humans. But humans are beautiful and wonderful. One of the things I have on my door, my father gave me a poem when I was 20, and I've had it in my pocket ever since. It's the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. And the opening line, which is, if you can keep your head about you when all are losing theirs and blaming it on you, that is public service. But that's wonderful because we do wonderful things here. Now, we do some things that are not less than great, and we learn from them. But on the less than great point, I would also point to another poem, if I could, E.E. Cummings, which says, "Oh, humanity, how I love you. You are always forgetting you have the secret of meaning of life in your back pocket and sitting down on top of it." That's human nature. It's not – one of the things I like to say when I'm talking about public service to people is I say, remember, Dilbert is funny because it's universal. We all have pointy hair bosses that we sometimes run up against. We all have catbird HR directors and things like that. It's universal. And so that again, going back to Federalist Papers number 51, which says, what is government but a reflection of all men? If all men were angels, no government would be necessary. I mean, that's what it is. We need to allow it to be human. But you need to be able to actually implement in that environment that sometimes gets messy and be able to actually work where someone has a totally different perspective and you need to understand that perspective. You just can't say that perspective is wrong. You have to understand that narrative and actually work with them and build those bridges. And then the third thing that you need to be able to do is that collaboration piece and effectively collaborate. And I think the good news is for millennials and Gen Z coming up, they inherently know they have to collaborate because they have to do it online. And actually, one of the things that I would recommend to anyone considering a career either in public service or the private sector, if you have not done it yet, join a massively multiplayer online game, try to form a guild, and run a guild of 50 or 60 people online that you've never met before. Because I think just that learning experience of how do you motivate people that you've never met to get things done and to tackle a problem and learn from it and handle the fact that maybe you take on whatever the goal is of the game and you initially don't succeed, but you got to rally them again and learn from it. That is a skill that's necessary for the 21st century wherever you are. And then the last thing I would say in closing about public service is while we may never have an IPO, I'm fond of telling this to the team, we will have what's called a reverse IPO or an OPI, which is an opportunity for positive impact. The people you will meet here, they're passionate, they're here for a reason, they find joy in tackling hard problems. And often that's what I say when I first parachute in an organization is when I meet with people is what brings you joy? And without a doubt, they will find some reason that they find joy in being of service to the public. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that's why we're here.
And I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been a great conversation. But more importantly, David, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you, Michael. I've really enjoyed being here. If people are interested, both the FCC blogs, not just my blog, but the chairman's blogs and other blogs are there. And then also I'm on Twitter at FCC_CIO.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with David Bray, Chief Information Officer with the Federal Communications Commission. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.